Thanks for listening to this podcast of Trending with Timory. If you haven't already subscribed, please catch us wherever you love to listen to your podcast, from the Relevant Radio app to Apple, YouTube, you name it, we are there. And if you listen on Apple Podcasts, please be sure to go and give us a 5-star review to help other people discover the podcast. Anything you share in terms of episodes, whether it's texting it to a friend, posting on social media, helps to build up the kingdom for God, to help confront the challenging issues we face as a culture, but with joy, with hope, and with an eternal perspective where our faith collides with everyday life, bringing eternal principles to help us live our life joyfully.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio.
It's our weekly happy hour today on Trending. If you have a question, we would love to hear from you. The number is 1-888-914-9149. Taking your questions related to happiness and ultimately getting over that desire for the momentary feeling of satiation, satisfaction, emotional happiness that comes and goes, but instead working toward that lasting joy that we can only find in God. We're going to talk about escaping your personal hell today to achieve happiness. We'll also dive into the Oscar showdown between Will Smith and Chris Rock. 3, I think, good things to take away from the altercation that occurred. And I am curious. Okay, we're going to have to put this up on my Instagram story in just a moment here. Do you or do you not believe that was staged and acting? Or do you believe that it was a real, legitimate defense of Will Smith's wife? You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. We're also going to talk about how you can actually get a master's degree in happiness. University has actually launched a full master's degree program in happiness. I'll share with you my thoughts on this. It's fascinating. So join me for our weekly happy hour today on Trending. Escaping your personal reality or personal hell is a reality that many of us set ourselves up in. We find ourselves anxious, lonely, depressed, frustrated, wanting what that other person has, wondering why the other person has that and not me. It can go anywhere from finances to friendships to families. Join me now to talk about ultimately escaping this hell we can place ourselves in is Father Robert Spitzer. Father Robert Spitzer is the founder and president of the Magis Center. That's M-A-G-I-S Center. We'll include links in the podcast notes for today's show so you can check out his work and the incredible curriculums they have for diving deeper into your faith. Full curriculums teaching you about happiness, suffering, Jesus, skepticism, science, and how science, reason, and faith all fit together. Father Spitzer, welcome back to Trending.
Oh, always great to be with you, Timory.
Your book, the titled Finding True Happiness, has a whole section talking about escaping your own personal hell. Let's talk about how we can actually practically walk through achieving that joy-filled perspective rooted in God rather than letting ourselves remain in this rut that so many people face today. How can we actually find how our faith and practical meditative, even using our imagination, can get us there?
Yeah, I think there's several ways. I mean, the first thing we have to do is get out of the ego comparative happiness viewpoint. And that's where people start living for, you know, who's achieving more, who's achieving less, who's got more power, less power, who's more intelligent, less intelligent, more athletic, less athletic, more beautiful, less beautiful, all day long. Making comparisons in order for us to sort of shift the locus of control to ourselves, to our egos. And once we're into that, by the way, about 70% of the culture is dominantly into that as their dominant view of happiness. Well, if that's the case, in order to break that spell, we need to do two things. The first is, in my view, we need to be contributive. We need to start looking beyond ourselves. And if we don't get out of that mode of kind of looking toward the self, toward the comparison, shifting the locus of control to ourselves, we're going to be in real trouble. And the second thing, of course, is we're going to need grace. I think spontaneous prayers are the first ways to get that grace into our lives, to start, reconnecting with the Lord in this very, very busy culture. But we have to go deeper than that. Getting that good sacramental life going, getting a life of a real reconciliation on a regular basis going, but also taking very, very seriously the teaching of Jesus Christ. Because if you take all of that together, all those things are like, ways out of egocentricity, ways out of narcissism, ways out of the ego comparative game, who's achieving more or less. So let's just start with the first of those recommendations, namely moving toward a contributive way of life. I think our first orientation has got to be, it's not about me. It's trying to do as much good as I can do with my life beyond me. And that means as much good as I can do for my family, for my friends, for my church, for the kingdom of God, for my community, my community center, the people might be around me that are not noticed by anybody else, and so forth and so on. So we're looking for ways we can use our time, talents, energy, our gifts to make an optimal positive difference, not only to the world, but to the kingdom of God, to the church, to Jesus Christ with our lives. If we start going, getting that orientation rather than who's achieving more and who's achieving less and who's got more power, less power, if we just make that fundamental shift, that's going to be a huge, huge contribution.
Can you talk a little bit, and I want to kind of cite a piece from your book. You talk about how our dominant view of happiness actually determines what we're looking for, and what we're looking for determines what we are living for. And then ultimately, when we take what we live for, that particular purpose, if we live it long enough, it becomes our identity. And I think this is fascinating in a culture of identity politics and confusion about happiness, depression, anxiety. How does our unconscious attitude and choices, how do those impact our happiness?
You really put it beautifully there, Timory. The first thing, of course, is that view of happiness, right? Aristotle said happiness is the one thing you can choose for itself. Everything else is chosen for the sake of happiness. So the one thing we don't want to do is make a mistake in what form of happiness we're choosing. So, if we're just choosing sensorial and happiness, we're going to be sorely disappointed. If we're, secondly, if we're going to choose ego comparative happiness, again, that's egocentrism, we're going to be sorely disappointed. Contribution gets us partially there. But let's suppose now, let's just take a quick look at each thing. So let's suppose I'm in ego comparative happiness. Who's achieving more? Who's achieving less? Et cetera, et cetera. That's what really matters to me. That's what I'm looking for in life. That's my view of success. That's my view of what'll really make a worthwhile life. I was better off than other people. I had better income than other people. I had more promotions than other people, more honors, more status. I was the greatest. And that would be a successful, great life. If that's what you're thinking for, notice the next thing that happens is that becomes my meaning and purpose in life. So if I start looking for this, if that's what I'm looking for all the time, that's becoming gradually my meaning in life. I'm really thinking this will make a successful, good, purpose-filled life. The minute I start, moving on to that plane and I live it long enough, it becomes me. I mean, it literally, you are the sum of your choices, say a lot of philosophers, right? The idea is if you're choosing this again and again and again, and you really are trying to find your ultimate sense of happiness, purpose in it, don't worry, it'll become you. And so you will become, as it were, this ego comparative self. It's not just going to be an ego comparative meaning, it's an ego comparative self. So you're going to reduce yourself to this ego comparison machine. You won't even know what's happening, but that's who you will become. And so that's very different. Let's suppose you go to level 3. And so you start saying, okay, I want to make an optimal positive difference with my life. to my family, to my friends, my church, the kingdom of God, the community around me. So I'm basically contributive. And if that's what I'm really looking for in life, how can I make an optimal positive difference? How can I make my life as worthwhile as I can possibly make it by trying to contribute to others? Notice how that will eventually become my meaning in life. But then it won't just be my meaning in life, because if I'm seeking that meaning in life and choosing it and choosing it again, the sum of my choices, right, I'm going to start becoming it. Myself will be a contributive person. I'll be a contributive self. Now, that is a much different self. You can just see a contributive self is going to do so much good for others, so much good for the world, so much good for family, so much good for the kingdom of God and the culture. Whereas an ego comparative self, what do you got at the end of the day? All you have at the end of the day is, wow, you know, I was better than Joe. I was, more promoted than Mary.
I think what I am.
Better looking than Sam. Yeah, exactly. Yeah, exactly. Yeah,
it's a whole philosophical fallacy. Yeah, whatever I think I am is what I am in my mind, which, I mean, good or bad can make us absolutely miserable. You know, something you said was so important when you were talking about essentially us becoming what we think and then also becoming what our actions are. And you and I have talked about this before, how social media plays such a difficult role in this, because if we're constantly thinking about what other person is wearing today, if what their vacation was today, what car they have, if we're always thinking even just about what other people have to say, we're always measuring ourselves against others and never have that moment to think, well, what do I actually think independently of all of these other influencers?
Yeah, that's very true. And in fact, you really don't have a true self. The ego comparative self is always comparing and therefore is always looking to another in order to get some form of identity or purpose in life. And suddenly all I become is a shadow of the people I compare myself to. C.S. Lewis had some really interesting symbols of that in his book, about the bus ride from hell to heaven called The Great Divorce.
Yes. Let's talk about how the imagination plays a role in this. How can our imagination help us escape our own personal hell that we allow ourselves to live in day to day, whether it be our comparison or even just living on the level of constantly looking for physical, emotional satisfaction from external goods? Where does the imagination play a role?
Yeah, well, you know, phantasms, right? That's the imagination. So if you are literally daydreaming, as it were, or night dreaming for that matter, although daydreaming is somewhat conscious, if you're constantly thinking about and imagining yourself in scenarios that are level two, that, you know, imagination, remember, that's what provokes emotion. And emotion is what moves thought into action. So if you are imagining things all the time, what winds up happening is that's going to provoke emotion, and that emotion is going to move your thoughts, your goals into action. So if you wanted to change, let's suppose you wanted to move from a level two person to a level three person. Well, the first thing you ought to do is you want to identify the goals, right, that you have. So how do I want to make an optimal positive contribution in my life? Now, if you start thinking about and then imagining is like daydreaming it almost, you know, it's your picture thinking it, right? You're not just thinking about it. You're thinking about you inside that scene where you're making a contribution to your family, or you're imagining yourself making a contribution to your church or to the kingdom of God or being a saint or whatever it may be. When you start imagining those things again and again, you'll notice you get energy and emotion from reconsidering those images, like Saint Ignatius of Loyola in the early part of his life. And as you can see, once the emotion starts, then all of a sudden, those goals you have, those thoughts that you had when you were trying to put together the not only the goals, but how to get to the goals, all of a sudden, as you begin, to get more and more emotion behind it, you find yourself naturally moving toward that imaged goal. And that is very powerful. And it's the same thing, too, with changing your moral life or all kinds of other things, right? So anyway, good.
You know, it's interesting when you mention this, Father, because if you look at many business models, they'll say, okay, you know, walk yourself through what you're going to achieve, whether it's football, we see this in football, you know, see yourself making the plays, or maybe it's in business, you know, you plan your work before you do it, and then you imagine how it's going to happen, what could possibly go wrong. It's a very successful and effective tool for making yourself effective and successful at what you planned to do to begin with. And so I want to dive in when we come back about how we can harness our imagination and use that imagination to actually move ourselves into not just happiness, that emotional feeling, but ultimately to lasting joy. Joining me now is Father Robert Spitzer, the founder and president of the Magis Center. And we are going to discuss again how to take yourself out of that personal hell you might be struggling in. You can find him at magiscenter.com. That's magiscenter.com. We'll be right back here on Trending during our weekly happy hour.
So, what's trending? Bridging your Catholic faith with your everyday life. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
There are three good things about what happened in the throwdown this weekend at the Oscars between Chris Rock and Will Smith slapping comedian Chris Rock in the face over comments that were made about his wife. I'll share that with you in just a moment, but I am curious to hear your thoughts. Do you think that that was staged, an absolute stunt to get more viewers for the Oscars? Because let's be real, who actually watches or pays attention to the Oscars other than people who live and work in Hollywood? Or do you think that this was a legitimate defense by Will Smith of his wife? You're listening to Trending with Timory here on Relevant Radio. You can vote now. I'd love to hear from you on my Instagram. Follow me at Timory. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. Joining me now is Father Robert Spitzer. He's the founder and president of the Magis Center. You can find them at magiscenter.com. We'll include a link in the podcast notes for today's show at relevantradio.com/trending. Or in the podcast notes, wherever you catch your podcasts. He wrote the book called Finding True Happiness. And in his book, he has a whole section on escaping your personal hell. And we're talking about how essentially what you think, the actions that you end up personifying, are essentially what will become your identity. And good or bad, you create how happy you will or will not be. And one of the things discussed in his book is the role of imagination. He mentions how imagination can actually convert our thoughts into beliefs, and how those beliefs are impacted by emotions, and how essentially our emotions move through our imagination into action. So in other words, what we imagine ourselves doing, how we imagine ourselves acting moment to moment, actually impacts our happiness both short and long term. So my question, Father Spitzer, is how can we use our reflective imagination to not just achieve happiness, but lasting joy in God?
Yeah, a really good question, Timory. And the first thing we have to do is decide on what we want. So we have to decide on a general goal. And, you know, if we're deciding on God and we're going to live for God, then...
You're listening to Trending with Timory. Oh, Relevant Radio. That's Father Robert Spitzer. We'll have him back in just a moment because it's so important what we're discussing with regard to the crisis surrounding happiness. And in his book, Finding True Happiness, he lays out how we can do this. And practically, this is part of what I love about Father Robert Spitzer's work, is he actually breaks down. He provides charts of here's where you're at. Here's how you can get further than this. Here's how you can achieve true and lasting happiness. This is how you can discover and find yourself in a better state. And what he shows in his book, Finding True Happiness, is actually a chart breaking down these four levels of happiness and walking your way in a imagining and picturing these four levels. So Father Robert Spitzer is back with us, and he's going to help us understand how reflecting and using our imagination can help us achieve happiness.
Right. So again, you know, once you decide on that goal, that it's really essential to then begin to, you know, fantasize about doing it, right? So let's suppose we say God is going to be our goal. I'd like to be a saint. Well, then pick a saint. Pick somebody that you really do, you know, want to imitate. And once you have that person kind of in mind, just think of yourself, you know, becoming like them. Now, St. Ignatius of Loyola did this unconsciously in his early life. And so he began to, you know, read this book, this life of Christ. Then he read a book on the life of the saints. And when he was thinking about all of these things, he began to imagine them, and all of a sudden the emotion starts coming, right? And he begins to think, hey, I can do this too. I can be like the saints. And so he actually then moves all of this into his, you know, realm of possibility, his comfort zone. He begins to think, you know, maybe I could be like Benedict. Maybe I could be like Dominic. Maybe I could be like Francis. And of course, once he does that, he's off and running because there's nothing that's going to stop him. His prayer life is significant. He believes that God's going to really help him out. He really believes, you know, he has in that visualization him doing all those things that Francis did, and off he went. He was the most effective person from, you know, just an apostolic point of view of just about anybody in history. Nothing could stop him. I mean, at the end of his life, he had the largest religious order in history. I mean, it just basically blossomed, and then finally, you know, 30,000 people later, etc. So the point is, of course, that imagination, you put it, Timory, it is so powerful that once it gets to emotion, once you start integrating God into it, once you bring your prayer life into it, once you believe you can do these things with the power and the grace of God, you could be just like, not just St. Ignatius of Loyola, but St. Dominic, who, of course, St. Ignatius was trying to imitate, St. Francis, who was unbelievable in what he accomplished. I mean, he was unstoppable. And, of course, it is the power of the imagination in combination with faith and prayer.
You know, it's fascinating what you're saying, Father Spitzer. And if you're just joining us, you're listening to Trending with Tim Ray. That's Father Robert Spitzer from the Magis Center, magiscenter.com. Father Spitzer, I think of a couple examples. One is one of the things I mentioned, and my mom and I had discussed this when the whole Gabby Petito missing person story and Brian Landry story came out, where, you know, this young, beautiful, sweet, like 20-ish year old girl is missing and then found dead. And it comes out that Brian Landry killed her. And then, you know, he ends up killing himself. And one of the things that many people talked about is that they were obsessively listening to the tales of serial killers. And, you know, this was a part of the content that they were consuming. And I remember my mom commented, she said, this is why it's so important we pay attention to what we consume, because if we're constantly consuming one type of thing, we start to act that way. And when you're talking about how important our imagination is, and how you gave the example of St. Ignatius, and how what he consumed inspired him to be the man and the saint that he was, it really makes me think how desperately we need to change the music, the movies, the books, the people, the social media posts that we're seeing day to day. What would you advise us to do when we're entrenched in a culture of entertainment and we're not really ready to let go of those things?
Well, I think, you know, there's two things that are really significant. The first thing is you're correct, Timory. What you read, what you consume, it enters into your subconscious mind, right? You can't help it. And once it gets into your subconscious mind, it begins to enter into your imagination. And once it enters into your imagination and you start living it, you start fantasizing about it, you start visualizing it, it all of a sudden becomes, you know, the emotion starts moving you to go in that direction. And that's why, absolutely, you are correct. You really do have to watch everything you consume. The books you listen to on tape, if you're me, or the movies you watch, or anything of that nature, because it goes right in through the subconscious. From the subconscious, it translates into the visual imagination. From the visual imagination, it translates into emotion. And once the emotion's there, It's so easy to start moving thoughts into action.
It is a challenge for us. I think times like now, and when we're in the midst of Lent, it's a little easier for us to detach from our music, our movies, our books, our social media. But my question is always, and I posed this to a friend of mine the other night when she talked about how beneficial being off of social media has been for her. She's not so angry. So I said, so what are you going to do when Lent's over? And the answer is usually, well, I don't know. And I think that's in part because we love that engagement on social media for good and bad reasons. We love the movie for good reasons of entertainment and relaxation. And so how do we start using our imagination, properly engage it to help make a positive change for happiness?
Well, the first thing we really do have to do is sometimes going cold turkey on social media, that'll never work. You know, that's the old devil scheme of, you know, tempt you to do too much, and then, of course, you fail. But the thing is, try to make some proper adjustments. When I'm on social media, what am I going to do? What am I not going to do? How am I going to engage my imagination? How am I not going to engage my imagination? So we have to start asking questions now during Lent. How do I want to do this? What are some steps I can take to modulate so that I don't get manipulated, so that I don't buy into the culture's thing of, you know, having to make a more and more fantastic image of myself on social media? How do I, you know, anticipate ahead of time? You know, if I look at this, you know, this clip, or if I look at these kinds of things, what's that going to do to me? What's that going to, is that going to pull me toward what I call level one or level two happiness? Or is that going to pull me up to level three or level four happiness? So I want to, you know, try to get as good a grip on it as I can before Lent ends. But to put some little baby steps together of significant things I can do to modulate. I don't want to get manipulated. I don't want to get pulled down. I want to use this media to pull me up so that I'm in control. My freedom depends on it. And that, you got to take the bull by the horns. And I would say form a group of people and start, you know, with your good friends who are kind of Catholic buddies or whatever, and try to form some little basic rules. Well, what do you think we ought to, you know, we should do when Lent's over? How do we want when Lent's over to really modulate our use of social media so that we're edified rather than pulled down, so that we're not getting the logic of ego comparative and narcissistic viewpoints and happiness and success, but instead contributive, faith-filled, saintly success that's trying to make an optimal positive difference. All of these things, you know, if we can get even a little hold on it, notice how the depression level starts coming on. So sometimes you don't even know you've got this sort of incipient depression and this incipient you know, sense of anxiety, a incipient sense of emptiness and alienation, loneliness. You don't even realize it, but as you sort of modulate the things that you're doing and you move a little bit more toward, you know, life of, you know, the sacraments, a little bit more toward Christ, and a little bit more toward getting, as you put it, Timmy, getting control of your imagination and setting the boundary for yourself so that you're not feeding your subconscious mind with stuff that's going to be channeled right back into your fantasy world.
Right.
If you do that, you're going to feel a real lifting of the emptiness, the alienation, the loneliness. Then you'll know, hey, I'm becoming more of a channel for Christ and for grace and less of a channel for all the gunk that the culture is trying to feed me. Because, you know, the gunk really will pull you down, and it really will not only make you unhappy, but much less effective in your path towards salvation and much less effective in helping others toward the same goal.
That's Father Robert Spitzer here on Trending with Timmery. Father, in your book, you have a whole chart laid out. Part of what I love about your work is you provide visuals and you have a chart of how to move through those four categories of essentially happiness and how to make a positive difference in various groupings of people's lives. And you have recommended in your book, Finding True Happiness, the a daily exercise can be looking at this list and for 15 minutes each day thinking about, well, how can I make these positive differences and how can I move toward contributing in my small local family unit to ultimately the kingdom of God to help shift me from those lower level desires and happiness to a higher level desire and happiness. Why is this exercise helpful and what are key points to implementing it?
Yeah, goals are everything, Timory. If we have goals, then we know where we're going, where we want to go, and the reasons why. Then you can start thinking about, like St. Ignatius of Loyola, right? You can start thinking about, I could be like that. I could be like that person who was trying to achieve that goal. I could be like that ideal father or mother. Or I could be like that ideal husband or wife. Or I could be that ideal leader in my company. Or I could be that ideal helper at church. I could be that ideal. And you start thinking about, you know, who are the ideals? Who are the kinds of people I'd like to follow? Sometimes our parents present such a wonderful example to us, and we just need to refocus on that. Sometimes we see people at church and we go, wow, what an example they are. In my own life, right, I always looked at Father Joe Katursky, one of my best friends, who just tended to be a saint, you know. I thought, you know, I'd like to be like him, you know, and, you know, I can be like him. But the first thing is we got to define those goals. How do I want to make an optimal contribution? How do I want to, you know, integrate prayer into my life? How do I want to draw closer to God? We've got to make some goals, right? If you don't have any goals, any road will get you there. In other words, you're going nowhere. You're just spinning in a circle. But if you do have goals, that's the first step. Second step, after you get the goals, find some ideal people who are living that goal. You know, it could be a saint. It could be a person you know. It could be your parents. It could be a teacher you might have known. It could be one of your friends. But find somebody who represents that goal in some kind of an ideal way. And then third, here's where the imagination comes in. Now, plug that into your image. Do that St. Ignatius thing. Hey, I could be like St. Francis. I could be like St. Dominic, right? Those were his two ideals. You know, I could actually imitate Christ in this way. And so finally, as you begin to visualize that, you know, fantasize about that, think about that, it will pull you up. Just like if you have bad fantasies, you know, materialistic ones or ones that are egotistical or narcissistic or whatever, it'll pull you down. And so the idea then is be in control of your fantasies, be in control of your visualizations. And in order to do that, you have to have goals and you have to have some sense of an ideal, a person who's living that out, whose example you can follow. But if you do that, I'm telling you, it makes all the difference in the world between being free and unfree, moving toward heaven and moving toward the other place. You know, being somebody who's truly effective in making the world a better place versus somebody who doesn't make the world a better place. And above all, being happy or being filled with emptiness, alienation, loneliness, dread, and guilt.
That's Father Robert Switzer of the Magis Center. You remind me of, I remember years ago, there was a priest I kept going to confession for, and every single time after he'd give me my penance, he'd always encourage me to read the lives of the saints. And I always felt like it was very, you know, generic, the same Hail Marys and the same exact phrasing where he'd tell me, and read the lives of the saints. And it would get annoying. I'd want me. Yeah. I want something else. I want a particular, you know, something particular to my situation. And it wasn't until years later when I really started to dive into various saints' lives, Father, that all of a sudden I saw that change of, I get why he keeps saying read the lives of the saints. Fill your mind, fill your imagination with the stories of these incredible human beings who have loved God in all their various states and be inspired by them. And this is what you are telling us to do to help ultimately achieve that greater level of happiness. Father Switzer, thank you so much for joining us. You can find him and his work, the Magis Center, as well as CredibleCatholic.com, free online resources. You want to become happier. You want to know Jesus. You want to be able to respond to the skepticism and scientific arguments surrounding God. That is the place to go, CredibleCatholic.com. I'll be back here on Trending during our weekly happy hour, and we're going to discuss the whole scenario of what happened at the Oscars between Will Smith and, you know the story, that comedian. We'll be right back here on Trending, but I want to hear from you. Vote on Instagram. Do you think this was real or fabricated, what happened to the Oscars, to get views? I'll be right back during our weekly happy hour on Trending.
We're talking about what you're thinking about. You're listening to Trending with Timory on Relevant Radio and the Relevant Radio app.
Okay, we are going to talk about the fact that you can now receive a master's in happiness. That's right, a master's in happiness. Who doesn't want to be happy? I think that this is a brilliant, brilliant business strategy. So many people are floundering after everything that's happened over the last couple of years, and they have online programs for a master's in happiness. Why is this significant? What are my thoughts on this? I'll share with you in just a moment. But first, we have to talk about it because you know you've been talking about it, whether you care or not. It's the buzz around the water cooler. It is the buzz on social media. That's right. What happened at the Oscars last night, over the weekend? You know, it's really interesting. I have been called by so many people to hear their take on what happened between Will Smith slapping Chris Rock in the face over the comments made about Will Smith's wife. Now, I do start by saying I'm curious to hear your thoughts. Do you think that this was a real situation of Will Smith defending his wife, or do you think it's completely fabricated and that this was planned and this was fantastic acting? I'd love to hear your thoughts. So the whole scenario rests upon, here Chris Rock is, he's hosting the Oscar Awards, and we have Will Smith ends up receiving later on in the evening Best Actor for his role in and as King Richard in the story, telling the story about the two well-known tennis players, the Williams, the Serena, and I'm forgetting the other woman's name right now, but here lies the story of this movie. Now, that's where he ends up receiving his award. However, before that, what happens is Chris Rock, of course, being a comedian, is making various comments, and he makes a comment in reference to Jada Pinkett Smith about her hair. Now, if you don't know, she has next to no hair because she's struggling with an autoimmune disorder that has basically destroyed her hair and caused it to, the hair follicles to stop growing. And so he makes fun of Jada by saying, "Jada, I love you. The G.I. Jane 2, can't wait to see it." Now, Jada isn't in G.I. Jane 2, but we know one of the main actresses for G.I. Jane 2 had to, you know, cut all her hair off in order to be in that movie and play that role. So he's making fun of Jada, who is actually suffering from an autoimmune disorder that's impacting her health, and she's on her own health journey. Well, everyone's laughing when this comment's made. You can see the video. Will Smith himself is laughing. And then next thing you know, Chris Rock comments, and here Will Smith comes up and he just slaps Chris Rock across the face. Mics are muted. Not many people see or have seen the unedited version, but then Will Smith goes to proceed and sit down, and he's yelling at Chris Rock saying, "Keep my wife's name out of your bleeping mouth." And he says it over and over again, yelling there in the hall at the Oscars. Lo and behold, a couple minutes later, he then receives the award for Best Actor Award for King Richard. Okay, many people are asking, and it's legitimate, and many people have even said who are working behind the scenes there at the Oscar, everyone thought it was a joke, from what was said by Chris Rock to Will Smith then slapping Chris Rock in the face. Now, if you've seen the video, Chris Rock hardly even steps a beat. I mean, he takes it in stride and keeps going. I would like to hear from you. Do you think that this was real and a legitimate defense of his wife, Will Smith's wife, or do you think that this was totally planned. You can vote now on my Instagram. Follow me at Timmerie. That's T-I-M-M-E-R-I-E. That's up on my Instagram story. But here's the deal. Whether or not it was real or not, here are my three, I think, big takeaways from what happened. First and foremost, of course, you know, we shouldn't make fun of people, especially in the context of someone who's ill and struggling with a health issue. But Chris Rock, the comedian, did accept this blow to the face pretty well. I mean, he didn't sit there defending himself. He didn't fight back at will. He didn't complain. He took it pretty manly, in a very manly way. And with, I would say, humility, maybe acknowledging, although he didn't apologize publicly yet to my knowledge, taking, okay, you know, I insulted the man's wife. He slapped me. Okay, well, here we go. And he just keeps going. You know, he showed, and a lot of people are speaking to his professionalism, but I think that it does speak to him going, okay, I said something, I got slapped in the face because, you know, as a comedian playing the part that I play, at a certain point, you know, you're going to get it handed to you for what you say. Now, Grant, there's a whole history between Chris Rock and Will Smith, a history of them, of really Rock calling out Smith for various things, from he and his wife boycotting the Oscars to various social media posts. But I do think what's interesting is, again, that Chris Rock was able to just take it and take it with some level of humility and calmness. So I think that that's the one example we can see, that even when someone does something to us, whether justly or unjustly on our part done, when someone comes back at us, we don't always have to defend ourselves. I'm not saying not to protect yourself, but even in arguments, you know, I think about arguments with my spouse or other people, you know, we don't always have to get the last word in. We don't have to get the last punch in. And that did show a level of humility. Now, this, and not to mention the humility of being slapped on national television in front of millions upon millions of people. Second, I think, is a perspective of Will Smith, the actor. Here he is. He defended his wife. I imagine he probably had to have been pretty embarrassed and also himself humbled when he then receives Best Actor Award for King Richard. And it's interesting because when he comes up to give his acceptance speech, the man is in absolute tears. He talks about playing the role of protector as King Richard in the film, telling the story Richard Williams is the father of tennis stars of Venus and Serena Williams. But then he also talks about how this protection role and being a fierce defender, like Richard Williams in the film, are part of what he believes he's called to right now, especially as a husband and a member of his family. So I thought that we saw on the other side, Will Smith, yes, if real and legitimate, defending his wife. Now, much could be said about whether or not this was the right way to defend his wife, and I think justifiably so. And here's what I would say, especially from a woman's perspective. I want to know that my husband can and will protect me, defend me, and if necessary, physically defend me. But I also want to know that he has the self-control to know when physical force is and is not appropriate. And I think that that's the important part of this whole conversation when people are talking about whether or not Will Smith should have punched the guy, slapped the guy. No, he shouldn't have. Was his wife physically in danger? No. But was she humiliated in the face of suffering with a medical issue? Yes. And, you know, my husband and I were talking about this earlier. We even said he could have walked up to Chris Rock and said, apologize to my wife, and stood there and waited until he apologized. And that is one thing that he could have done. There are many approaches, but I think that one good thing we can see is that Will Smith was willing to do something, if perhaps not in the right context. A lot could be said. I think one of my big questions looking at the whole thing is, was his defense of his wife really about his wife, or was it about him and his ego and him doing something that could gain attention or show his strength in that moment? And how it came off was, yeah, he defended his wife, but he made it about him. And even though he was weeping in his acceptance speech and talking about being a protector and a defender, it was all about him. And notice he said next to nothing about his wife in his actual acceptance speech. And that really stood out. That was one of those moments. I think he said more about his mom than he did about his wife. And Grant, as a new mom, you know, of course you want your child to love you. But I thought that that was a little concerning personally. On a third level, though, my third kind of take on this whole Chris Rock and Will Smith thing. One fascinating moment in Will Smith's acceptance speech is he mentions God. He said, "I'm overwhelmed by what God is calling on me to do and be in this world." Now, Will Smith arguably is one of the most famous and successful actors of this time. And the fact that he's talking about God for a moment here, on really an international stage, I think is extremely profound. Is Will Smith perfect? Is he the ideal model for marriage, anything else? No. You know, he might even be living an open marriage. I've discussed that here on Trending before. But what I do think is significant is here's a man, clearly not perfect, has a moment of glory, and he mentions two things. One, he mentions that Denzel Washington, when he was checking on Will Smith right after Will Smith punched Chris Rock, that Denzel Washington looked at him and said, "At your highest moment, be careful. That's when the devil comes to you." But then he mentions God, that is Will Smith, and he says, "I'm overwhelmed by what God is calling on me to do and be in this world." Will Smith benefits nothing on a national stage in Hollywood by using God. He benefits nothing. He doesn't have to mention God. That means nothing to Hollywood elitists. That means nothing to probably a lot of his fans. But what I think this says to you and I, that in the face of Will Smith, Will Smith's life, Will Smith just punching Chris Rock on a national stage, what it does say is that there are people in all states of life who are still turning to God, who are still recognizing, "I need God," and also recognizing that God has a will for our lives. And I think that the fact that God was mentioned at the Oscars is actually a moment for us to say, you know what, this was a good thing. Even if what happened with Will Smith, the whole context wasn't great, the fact that Will Smith does bring God up shows that he doesn't care in a certain respect what Hollywood elitists who are very anti-God at times have to say or think. When I think about it, even coming full circle, you Christ can change and transform and uplift anyone. But are we willing to cooperate with him? And when it comes to Will Smith protecting his wife and trying to figure out what it means to be a follower of God and understanding how and where God has called him to in his life, I actually think of St. Peter. How St. Peter didn't quite get how he was supposed to be a protector of Jesus Christ. I know it's a long jump from Will Smith to St. Peter, but think about it. St. Peter's in the Garden of Gethsemane, and here he is, his Lord and Savior, his leader, one of his closest friends, in other words, God himself, has just been betrayed and turned over to the Jews. He's known that the Jews have wanted to kill Jesus, and he whips out his sword, clearly ready and equipped, viewing physical safety as a concern for Jesus, and he just cuts off the ear of one of the guards. And Jesus corrects him in that moment. You see, St. Peter had to learn the proper balance of being a protector of Christ and a protector of the church. In fact, he struggled. He cuts off the ear, and the next thing you know, he abandons Christ in his suffering. He abandons Christ at the scourging, at the sentencing. He abandons him at the crucifixion. He's not there. And we know he follows Christ for some time, but he's not there at the cross. And so St. Peter had to learn over time, with years of grace and receiving the sacraments, of uniting himself to God and God drawing him and filling him with his graces. Ultimately, St. Peter got it. And he saw the greatest way he could protect someone else was to lay down his life for Christ and the church. He was crucified like Christ, but upside down. But he found himself unworthy to be crucified right side up the same way as Christ. That's an example of humility, of the transformation that God's grace can affect in our lives, that even in the lives of Will Smith and ourselves, we, with God, can see that hope and ultimately see the true joy with Jesus Christ. There's one thing that the feminist movement has been very effective at, and that is brainwashing us as women with regard to our attitude about our kids. This is Tim Ray from Trending with Tim Ray. Tomorrow I'm going to talk about how the reality is kids need their moms, and it provides a lot of consideration in a constant check-in with regard to where we are as women within the context of our family and our kids. So join me Tuesday at 6 p.m. Central on Relevant Radio or the Relevant Radio app as I discuss how important moms are.